This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This episode is brought to you by HP Instant Ink. No one is reading your mind, but HP Instant Ink knows when your printer is running low and sends new cartridges before you run out. So you never have to think about ink. For details, visit hp.com/instantinkSpotify. Conditions apply. This episode is brought to you by PayPal. These days, choices are everywhere. Like, for instance, the milk in your coffee. Would you like it from a cow? A nut? A tree? Everyone wants options. And now your customers have a new option in the way they pay. With PayPal in person. Just generate your unique QR code in the PayPal app for them to scan. And start accepting PayPal in person today. Learn more at paypal.com/US/getQR code.
Hello and welcome to the Washed Up Emo podcast. I am Tom Mullen from washedupemo.com. Today, Corey Castro of the band Free Throw joins us for episode 104. Free Throw just released their best work to date on Triple Crown Records entitled Bear Your Mind, and it is worthy of your time to listen to it. They are part of the new era bands from the independent scene, and Free Throw would have fit just as good in the 90s as they do now. Thank you for supporting the podcast and those that support via Patreon. It helps immensely. This is episode 104 of the Washed Up Emo podcast with Corey Castro from Free Throw. Ready?
Yeah.
All right. Corey from Free Throw, thanks for being on the podcast.
Hey, yeah, I'm very excited to be here.
Brooklyn. What's up, Brooklyn? Graffiti everywhere. No gunshots. Just kidding. It's Williamsburg. We're gonna see more Prada bags than gunshots.
I've already noticed so far.
It's one of those hot days. So did you grow up in Nashville?
Yeah, born and raised Nashville, Tennessee.
Now no one's moving there now.
Yeah, no, I haven't noticed a single outsider. Not a single one.
What is that like? I mean, I had been there a few times for work things, you know, but then these last 5-6 years, it just seems like, I mean, yes, it's always been epicenter of music industry.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
But then it's more now, not just country.
Yeah, no, it's everything now, which is really fucking weird, to be honest.
Really?
Am I cool to cuss? Is that okay?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. It's just really weird, especially growing up in Nashville, being born there. I was born in a hospital called Westside Women's Hospital, which is now called Centennial Hospital in Nashville in 1988. So I've lived there my entire life. And to be honest, it's weird to see that the way the city is now. Like, the way the city was when I grew up is a lot different than the way it is now. Now when I walk around, people are like, oh, so where are you from? And I'm like, here. They treat me like I'm a unicorn or something.
Yeah.
Which is really, it's really weird to think about that. Because me and Justin, who plays bass in the band, he's my little brother.
Ah.
So we're both born and raised in Nashville, Tennessee.
So for a scene growing up, finding punk rock kids in a country town.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Honestly, because shows came through.
Yeah. Not to interrupt, but like shows came through, but it was like, it's so dominated
by
that.
Country music and stuff. And one of the cool things that led me to punk rock is that, you know, a lot of punk rock finds its roots in country music. Sometimes, especially older country music, like, you know, Hank Williams and stuff like that. Like punk, a lot of punks are very into that kind of music. And so,
rockabilly stuff.
Yeah, especially. When I was in my... We moved outside of Nashville whenever I was in my early teenage years. And so we were living in this like area where there was nothing to do. And so I just, in high school, I started, you know, drinking and smoking pot with my friends.
Yeah.
And one thing led to another. I had a friend who was really into like street punk, like Rancid and stuff like that.
That's always the first sketchy friend
and I was,
you meet.
Yeah. And I was really into skateboarding at the time. I started skateboarding at the age of 10. So I was really into that. And that the skateboard culture kind of led me to punk rock, I guess. And to hip hop as well, which I've been into for a very, very long time. And in Nashville, there wasn't really a huge scene for it. Probably until right around the time I was a senior in high school, I started noticing there were more punk shows coming through town. There was a venue called The Muse, which was this dirty-ass place. There's an ongoing joke about people who actually use the bathroom there. Like, you don't go close to them. You know?
And then the Exit Inn was there, too.
Exit Inn's always been there. It's always been, like, kind of, like, the cooler, like, a little bit upscale punk rock place. And then you have The End across the street.
Yes.
Which is a staple in our scene, even today. But, yeah, I started going to these shows at these dirty punk rock clubs, you know. Just out of nowhere, friends were inviting me, and I started going, and now I'm living the lifestyle. Like,
yeah, but what was like? Was there like a band, or was there what's like? I mean, it's funny how you say skateboarding and thrasher because a lot of bands that were from, you know, growing up in the '80s when you weren't, you know, you were still a thought.
I was still a thought.
That was it. Thrasher and, you know, those punk videos. That's where you heard about bands, and then it was like the underground.
Yeah, I actually, a lot of the bands I started listening to, I heard from skate videos. Modest Mouse, I first heard in a
skate video.
I heard the song Edit the Sad Parts, which really turned me on to the whole idea of listening to bands like Sunny Day Real Estate and eventually American Football and things like that. I was really into like the kind of like the darker side of, you know, the earlier emo days, like Page 99.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, so which I just heard about the reunion shows, and I'm like, I really want to go, but we're so busy these days.
Oh,
it's like
damn.
Hard for me to make it out. Yeah. Anywhere. But, yeah, so skate videos, it definitely was something that, skateboarding was definitely something that brought me into the scene. And there were a few bands around town, especially when I was in high school. I went to this school for my first year of high school. I was in ninth grade. I went to a school called Wilson Central High School outside of Mount Juliet, Tennessee. And there was like a old emo-esque band that played this local place called Cafe Express called Oliver's Army.
Interesting.
And I saw them for the first time, and I think that was the initial bite. I think that was when I was...
This like, is it.
This is the kind of music that I want to make, or that I like to listen to and want to do.
Did you go out and buy instruments right after that? Or
I had actually been playing music a little bit before that, but just kind of dabbling. I got my first guitar from my dad when I was six.
That's nice and early.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dad.
My dad always kind of like... was into writing country music and trying to be a country singer. He's not the best at it by any means. He can play some chords.
Yeah.
But it was always like a kind of a thing he was interested in. And so I told him I wanted a guitar when I was six, and that's what I got for my birthday. Just some really, you know, shitty little acoustic guitar.
Of course.
So I'd been dabbling around. But around that time, yeah, is when I first decided, like, I want to put my mind to this. I want to learn how to play guitar. I think I was about 13 years old. And I started playing guitar around that time.
Were there other people that you had friends in school that were playing bass or drums? Like, did you have that kind of
Actually,
thing yet?
No, there wasn't at that time. I didn't meet anyone else who played instruments until my sophomore or junior year.
Wow.
And that's when I started playing in bands, is because I finally met other people that played music.
And you were probably going to shows, you were probably going to, you know, hanging out.
I was kind of a little bit of an outsider. I was kind of a wall hugger, you know, at the time. Like, I'd go to the shows and I'd just stand up against the wall. And the funny story is that at the time, my little brother was still into skating and all of that kind of stuff. He was actually a rollerblader.
Oh, no way.
He was very, very good at it. And
there's a separate skill for that.
Yeah. And he was really into that. And so he didn't even play music until we were both in college when I taught him how to play the bass guitar.
Did you guys go to the same school?
Yeah, we went to Middle Tennessee State University. Yeah.
What'd you do when you were there? Was it more bands? Was it?
I went there to join a band. That was the idea. Cause at the time, the majority of the Nashville like hardcore metal and punk rock scene was coming out of that school. So that's pretty much why I went there.
You went to punk rock school.
Yeah. I went there because I wanted to join a band. That was the whole idea.
Yeah.
He went there just because I was there, and he had ended up having really good grades and got a scholarship to go there.
Nice. Your parents were happy?
Yeah, they were happy about that until, you know, he dropped out.
Oh. Sorry, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, they're happy now.
Okay, good.
You know, one thing I did learn in college is how to drink, that's for sure.
Yes. I'm straight edge, but I saw people do it.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being straight edge at all. I actually have a high respect for straight edge people. I grew up a lot in the punk and hardcore community, so I have plenty of friends who are 100% straight edge. I mean, in, you know, I have some older friends that are in their like mid 40s now, likely almost to their 50s, that are still straight edge, still representing to this day.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's I took that as a positive thing, where a lot of my friends were getting fucked up and doing dumb shit, and I was going to shows and meeting people and getting records. And I remember my sister had this like curfew. She's older than me, and my parents didn't have a curfew for me on weekends for shows because they knew I wasn't being stupid.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a nice pro.
I know.
You know, on the list there.
A con? Well, it's quite a few. It's fine. From college, like, did you? I mean, you said you went to school for that. Yes, you had a major. Yes, you were.
Yeah, I was
going
a philosophy major. Actually,
perfect, Corey. These are all lining up to be a great band. And then, when did you feel like, all right, I'm going to do this for real? We're going to take this swing.
It was actually in my. It was my second year of college. I had been trying to join a band for a while, and I ended up living at a house with a couple guys that were in a band that I ended up joining. It was like a metal band. I wasn't really looking to be in a metal band, but I didn't have anything to do. I played guitar. I jammed with them all the time. They were about to do a full U.S. tour and needed a bass player. And so I basically, with the help of my dad, sold off what few things I could, bought a bass rig.
No way.
Joined a band at 19 and went
for
my first full U.S. tour.
Was that like on the summer?
Yeah, it was a summer. My first tour ever.
No
full
shit.
U.S. tour.
How cool is that?
It was kind of scary, to be honest. You kind of you always dream of doing tours.
But as soon as you're outside of town, you're like,
oh man,
I got to go to the bathroom, but we just left. And then the guy's driving at it.
You definitely learn how to pee in bottles.
Yeah. That's kids out there, we will explain that later. Corey's going to do a how to on the YouTube channel.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so I did my first full U.S. tour at 19. I'm 29 now. I've been on and off touring ever since. I kind of knew, after that first full U.S., I realized what I was getting into, and kind of knew it was what I wanted to do from there.
Yeah, and we kind of skipped over because we talked about Thrasher, but getting into all those different genres and now hearing Free Throw, you hear all of them. Like I can tell, and I love that. I loved punk bands. We talked about Rancid earlier. I love all those bands, but my brain was like, I want something a little bit more meaty and deep.
Yeah.
And when someone has all those different influences, I was like super into hardcore metal.
Yeah.
And I loved American football.
Yep.
Of course. And Promise, whatever that, you know,
absolutely.
It was like all three. Yeah. It's like, I want to have a band sound. My band in college sounded like Jejune and Texas Is the Reason.
That's awesome.
That's what we sounded. We had a girl singer, but we had like heavy riffs. What was it when you were finding guys and working on those songs? Did everyone come from that? Or was there like the super indie rock kid, or was there the stoner?
Oh,
like,
for Free Throw?
Yeah, for Free Throw.
Honestly, all of us in Free Throw, well, the original members of Free Throw, we all kind of came from the same small town where I went to high school, which after that freshman year of high school that we talked about, my family moved to a town called Fairview, like 25, 30 minutes outside of Nashville, and I started going to school there. And basically, me, Justin, my younger brother, and Larry, our guitar player, all hung out in like the same group of friends. Larry was from the town over, but we all hung out together, so we all played music together. And our drummer before Kevin, Zach Hall, who was the drummer on Those Days Are Gone, He went to the same high school as me and Justin. So we had all been friends for years and all played in different bands. And we had known each other for a long time. We'd gone on tour together in random, like, random situations.
Yeah.
And one day me and Larry were just kind of sitting in our basement, in my basement. We were drinking Steel Reserve. I don't know why.
Great memory.
But and we were just like, hey, man, like, let's play some music. Let's start a new band. And we ended up writing two songs, which were Milo and Level 2 Pidgey and a Master Ball from
yeah.
the first EP. And Justin came home from work, and we were just like, dude, you're in a band now.
Sorry.
and he was just like, okay. And that's kind of how the band started. As for influences, me and Larry have both played in metal bands. We've both played in punk bands. So it's kind of, yeah, I think there was never really any, like...
This is it.
Yeah, it was kind of just, we were listening to more songs by grown-ups, and we were like, you know, let's start a band.
Yeah.
And we were both into American football, grown-ups. We were really into the Clippers at that point. Just a lot of random bands, a lot of top shelf bands, actually, we were listening to at the time. And
what years was that? That was like...
This was 2012 or
2012, yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, when the 2011, band started. 2012.
And so there was... We never really, like, came up with an actual formula for the band. We just kind of went with it. And then our influences over time all started to kind of show, you know. Definitely with some of the heavier stuff, especially with the newest record, we wanted it to be a little bit heavier because when we play live... We come off a little bit like heavier and crazier, a little more punk rock, a little mm-hmm. more like loud. Whereas on the record, like on Those Days Are Gone, the record was recorded mostly with clean guitars because we really wanted to have that pristine, clean guitar sound, you know. And then this time we were like, well, we don't play it like that live. We should just record the record like we're going to play it live.
Yeah.
So we went for that a little bit more on the new one, I think. But yeah, there was never really like the distinct like stoner guy or like... We're all kind of the same. I mean, we've all been friends for so many years that it's...
Feels natural when you're coming together. Because you went to the same shows, you had the same experiences.
We all came up... Well, I'm a little bit older than the rest of them, but we all came up in the same kind of group of people.
And then, I always ask this just because it's interesting. Do you remember the first time you heard it, the word emo?
I think I was in either 8th or 9th grade the first time I actually heard the word emo, because I'd been listening to bands before that are considered emo by people today, but I never really, like, a genre wasn't really a thing to me back then. I was just like...
No, you were...
I was just listening to
music. Oh my God, you know? It doesn't matter. Yeah. You're actually pure and, like, you know, it didn't matter.
And I think I was in either 8th or 9th grade, and someone was like, do you listen to Thursday? And I was like, yeah, I've heard a few Thursday songs. And they were like, oh, so you're into emo, you know? And I was like, what the fuck is emo? I had no idea, you know? I figured, you know, bands like... I was listening to bands like Thursday and, like, you know... At the time, I'd already gotten into Sunny Day Real Estate and the Get Up Kids a little bit.
Yeah.
To me, it was just, like, cool, like, punk rock stuff. Like,
yeah.
I wasn't really I wasn't really taking in the lyrics as much as I probably should at that point.
Lyrics were last for me, for bands. I was a guitar player, so it's like I wanted to know what the riffs were, the breakdowns.
Yeah. And at that time, I'd started playing guitar, so I was definitely listening more of like the riffs
yeah.
and like how the guitar was going. I hadn't taken into the fact that the lyrics were a little bit different than other, you know, like punk bands and stuff like that. So, yeah, so that was the first time I was like, what? Emo? And, I mean, but learning that word, I guess, as, you know, derogatory as some people think it is these days, you know, I still embrace it.
That's the thing. It's I actually had a long conversation with someone the other day about that word being, you know, what happened to it when it's been hated since the moment it was coined.
Yeah.
Emo core in DC.
Yeah,
it's been hated because
it was emotional hardcore, and then they just shortened it, I guess.
And it's like the hardcore kids being like, I mean, we'd go to a post-hardcore show, and the hardcore kids would give you shit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why it's so hated. I don't think it should be. It's like, you know, to me, emo is... I don't think it's a bad word. I think people, especially with the whole, especially in the last year or two with the whole emo revival kind of thing and all of that stuff, I think a lot of people started to hate it again because of the fact that it was becoming oversaturated. You know, like people were going, oh, this band is emo. Oh, this band is emo. Oh, this band is emo. This band is emo.
Yeah.
Oh, my band is emo. Oh, my band is emo. Yeah. Like, and it, I think like people just got tired of hearing it. But I don't, you know, that's, it's just like shoegaze now, you know. Yeah. People are like, oh, yeah, this band's shoegaze. Well, it's not real shoegaze, you know. It's like just that kind of stuff. It all comes down to genre, you know.
And people are always going to put things in genre.
They're gonna section things off from other things. It's just a way of, I think it's a human habit, to be honest, to kind of make things distinct from other things or try to make them distinct.
You're trying to categorize it.
Yeah, to categorize.
Yourself.
Absolutely.
I think for the genre, though, there's this, like, a point. There's certain people that want to have the name. Like,
yeah.
I think it's a lot of the mid-2000s. Like, mm-hmm. they're making a lot of money from it.
Yeah.
Or they, like, hit that one moment where that was hot. And then there's other people that are like, no. We're a rock band.
Yeah. To us, it doesn't really matter. Like, we kind of wear it like a badge of honor, you know? It's in a lot of our social media names, and that's not even because we were like, we're going to be an emo band. You know, like,
it's that Free Throw wasn't available.
It wasn't, and also emo rhymes with Free Throw, and we just were drunk and thought it was hilarious that it rhymed, so we were like, Free
that's
Throw,
funny.
Emo, And that's how we got, we just made all of our socials the same night that basically we started the band.
Wow.
So it's like, the whole band was just the drunken brainchild of a group of friends, really.
Hanging out.
Yeah, and it's gone a lot farther than I expected it to.
That's great. Well, I think, too, the word itself and you guys having that badge of honor and being like, I think it helps other bands see that it's okay if you want to do that, and you can have a sound. That word means so many different things.
Yeah.
It could mean, like, total chaotic scream. Mm-hmm. It could mean American football. It could mean Texas, you know, chug, like,
yeah.
Balancing composure. Whatever it is, however you want to do it, it could sound however you want.
But yeah, I think, the whole basis of the word is emotional, you know? So I think that it's completely okay to consider your music emotional. And if you want to call it emo, that's up to you, you know? And if people want to call your band emo, that's just up to them, you know? It's how people categorize things.
What I think's tough is when the general population thinks of haircuts, cutting, suicide,
yeah.
goth. Well, and then that's when I sort of get frustrated when
yeah.
you ask 10 people on the street and they think it's this and they think it's a joke.
Well,
and this is not your stuff.
Exactly.
I think the genre has not been taken seriously because the publications that cover it always have to crack a joke.
Yeah, there's always that, oh,
one,
well,
little snide.
This isn't the emo that you're thinking of, kind of thing. You know, like all snide remarks like that. Yeah, well, I mean, and we did go through a period of time in pop culture where
that was it.
That was what people considered emo. And it really wasn't because of the music. It was just because of the culture that was deriving from certain scenes at the time. And honestly, to me, whenever I was in high school, we didn't really call people that, like, had the haircuts or anything like that emo. We called them, like, you know, like mall goth. Or,
yeah,
like,
Hot Topic kids.
Yeah, or for a while people were using the word scene, you know.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Scene kids, you
yeah.
know. Like, we never once referred to them as emo, but I think a lot of major publications during that period did refer to that as emo. They did refer, as much as I personally love a band, like My Chemical Romance, like, and that whole, like, you know, like phase of, you know, the way that music was styled and the culture was, they referred to that as emo, which is completely fine. But I think
that's not the only one.
Yeah. There's a whole, emo is a very broad spectrum, I think. Just like any music genre, I think
exactly.
It's a huge broad spectrum.
Which is, if you say punk to somebody,
yeah.
they'll say Ramones and they'll say Menzingers or whatever it is. They'll
or they'll say Mohawks, you know.
Yeah, they'll say Mohawks, but you know there's more than one. And I think with mm-hmm. emo, they're going to just say those four bands
yep.
and that's it. And I want them to say Sunny Day,
yeah.
My Chem, and Free Throw,
yeah.
or whatever the band is. I want, and I feel like that's not there yet.
Yeah, it's definitely not. I hope that it eventually is.
I hope it will. I think the great records like Sorority Noise that came out this year, Hotelier,
yeah.
Foxing, you guys have stepped it up. Hopefully that's a stake in that, like, this is the word survived.
Yeah.
Like, it died.
Yeah.
It died. And I don't know how it happened, but people found it again. And there's something to that.
At the time, I was in college.
What years was that?
I had gone back to college at this point. You know, I'd pulled a Milo.
Come on, Corey.
And so
just busting it. Like your dad right now. Like busting it.
I had stopped touring for a bit and I'd gone back to college. I think this was probably 2009, 2008, maybe somewhere around there.
Which is right when I was frustrated / started hearing about shit.
And that was the first time that I think I heard Algernon and Snowing, you know, those bands. A friend of mine in college had brought me to his dorm room, and because we both were huge American football fans and Sunday Real Estate fans. He's like, dude, I got these bands I want you to hear. And I was like, okay, cool. So, you know, we went up to his dorm room, and we were like drinking on the sly because it was a dry campus. And he's playing these bands for me, and I'm like, dude, this is fucking amazing. Like, where did you find this? And he's like, I've just been browsing blogs, you know?
Yeah.
There was this whole blog, like, resurgence at that time of just blogs, you know, putting up music. And that's how Free Throw, whenever we first put out our first EP, the way we got it noticed, we just sent it to blogs. And that's kind of died down now, you know, with Spotify and like streaming services, music being so readily available all the time, people, you know, are learning about music through their Discover playlists and things like that. We used to, you know, at that time, we were just searching through blogs. And a lot of the people online that were posting these blogs were calling these bands emo because when they were thinking of emo, they were like us. They weren't thinking of, you know, the whole like mall Hot Topic kind of thing. They were thinking of, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate. Or, you know, and even on the harder side of things, you know, and like Screamo side of things, like Page 99 or like Circle Takes a Square.
Yes.
And like all these bands that I grew up listening to, and these people were like, oh, yeah, this is emo is
it
back.
It was channeling.
You know?
I told Kevin from Top Shelf this. It was channeling exactly what was going on in the 90s.
Yeah.
It really had this community, you had, you know, venues, you had this, you had labels that were like cultivating.
Oh man, yeah. I used to listen to anything that, like, for a while, anything like Deep Elm put out, I was listening to it.
Yeah.
You know, or like, it just, yeah, it was like, it was this very kind of like small, but big thing at the same time. It was really cool to watch it happen again.
It's great to hear your side, because literally I was like, doing my site for a couple years, frustrated. Every post was angry. Like, no one's talking about Sunny Day. And then this, like, this kid from Russia emails me and says, I'm in a band and it sounds like Mineral. And that was insanely foreign to think, A, someone remembers who that band is, and B, you're from Russia.
Yeah.
And then it started. Then someone told me about the Philly scene.
Yeah.
And
I was like,
wait
a
minute.
Very popular.
I was like, wait a minute. This shit's back?
Yeah. It's like, yes!
You know who those bands are?
It's funny to think now, like, when we played Fest last year, I think it was last year, Mineral was playing, and to see how many people were just fucking excited to see Mineral, I was like, there are more people like me? You know, because when I was growing up, I listened to these bands and no one knew who they were. You know? I mean, like, people knew in the mid-2000s, you know, people knew the more popular bands. You know, they knew the Taken Back Sundays, Brand News.
But they weren't talking about Sunny Day.
Yeah, they weren't talking about Sunny Day Real Estate. They were barely talking about the Get Up Kids, you know. And, like, these are bands that when I was younger, I had started listening to, you know, because of, you know, one person showed me this band. One person showed me this band. And it was just... It was a really cool time for me whenever, like, around that late 2000s to early 2010s time.
We were probably having the same, like, oh shit moments. Because I had a friend, the same thing, be like, you got to come over and hear a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
It was, like, Snowing, all that stuff. Yep. And I was like, oh my God, who are these kids? I have to talk to them.
And that was also around the same time that bands were popping up, like Joyce Manor and stuff, that were kind of like...
The punkier.
Yeah, the punkier side of it was also popping up as well, which was like...
That's that whole thing about that it wasn't cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Like, you'd see some of those tours and that it was like every fucking band, I could almost count when the breakdown was coming. Like, it was like, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4. But it was like, you're right, hearing a Joyce Manor, listening to Algernon, or like, they were all different, but you could tell what they were pulling from.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a sign to me that they were searching.
Yeah. There were a lot of bands that even fell through the cracks during that time that really liked. There was a band called Old Pine from, I don't even remember where they're from. I think they're from Pennsylvania. I'm not sure. I don't remember. I've talked to them before.
Sorry, Old Pine.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I bought your record in Germany. I know you're not from Germany. But yeah, they were a band that I really, really loved, but no one had heard of them. But because of, it's almost a thing I missed from that time is the whole blog digging thing. It's like crate digging.
Yeah,
you know?
And also the waiting.
Yeah,
like just I had to wait to see it to hear it.
Yeah,
yeah. I miss that because there was I think you spent more time. And trust me, I love that I could listen to your record in 5 seconds when I told Fred to send me the record. That was amazing. I love that. Fred, send me the record now. And I got it. But I also would have missed, you know, been like, hey, maybe we wrote letters or we emailed and then you sent one song. There's something about that waiting that I think I can't envision a band now trying to be a band because of how much noise there is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also one of the things about the waiting is like it builds up the hype too, you know. It gets you like excited for something to come out. But also the downfall is if it doesn't live up to your expectations,
yeah.
All of a sudden you hate it even worse because you waited so long
and
for
you
it.
Spent like $20 or whatever to get it.
But yeah, I definitely, cuz I mean, it's hard to think that only, you know, 4 or 5 years ago Spotify wasn't like really even that big a thing. Now it's like Spotify and Apple Music are like the biggest things in the world for music right now,
and the blogs are kind of,
yeah. I mean I used to have my own blog. Nobody followed it at all, but I mean I have my own blog, and you know, you just don't see them as much anymore.
Yeah.
I used to, you know, follow blogs that were, you know, like Circling the Drain, or for like hardcore and stuff I'd go to like Toxic Breed, you know, Funhouse, or like, I don't know. I was like
Couch King.
Yeah, Couch King.
I love those dudes.
I was finding all this music that
Washed
I never
Up
would've...
Emo?
No, yeah. I was finding all this music that I never would have found otherwise.
No.
It's just because, you know, random bands were sending in their music and they would post it up on the blog. Or if they found something that they liked, they would post it up on the blog. And I kind of miss that in a way. It reminds me of a time when I'd spend a whole, you know, afternoon or like a Friday with my friends. Like we would just go through a blog, we'd put on a record, we'd drink, we'd listen to it, we'd decide whether or not we liked it, and then we'd go to the next one.
Yeah,
and it was just a good time. But yeah, it's really interesting to think how history kind of works in cycles like that, because in the 90s, you know, people would go, you know, would find their music in different ways, whether it be, you know, record stores or CD shops or even cassette tapes at the time, or going to
mixtapes.
going to shows in the distro. I still like it whenever we play a show, or if we play like kind of like DIY spot or something, they have a distro there. I'm always like, dude, this is sick. I'm going to go through it.
Because there's probably a record in there that's from a local band that's not at the store. You can find those little ones that are happening in that town where that kid's trying.
That's
has a small
how
label.
I bought the Old Pine record.
Rad.
Was we were playing the show in Germany, and the promoter had his own distro that he would bring to each show that he put on.
Rad.
And I was going through his distro, and he had the record there, and I was like, I've never seen this record in person. I need to buy it. So I bought it.
That's so cool.
I miss that time from when I was really younger and the distro at shows and stuff like that, and I also miss the time when the distro became, you know, blogs. And now, you know, it's Discover playlists.
Yeah.
That's your distro these days.
What do you feel right now with what's happening with we're at a crazy point.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting crazy press. Bands are getting that moment and their records are getting better.
Yeah. Yeah. I you know, I don't really know where we go from here. It's kind of interesting.
Do you think one's going
to
break?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm kind of hoping that there's something that comes along that brings back that old feeling. You know what I mean? Because right now it's like you've got the bands that are already somewhat popular, and it's getting back to that point where it's harder for new bands, you know, to pop up and get popular. Whereas it's like it like I said, it almost goes through cycles where there'll be a time when it's easier for new bands to pop up and get popular because so many people are interested and they're, you know, they're going through the blogs or they're going through the distros or they're doing all of this
and
stuff.
And then it gets too much.
And then it gets too much. And I think it, like, all of a sudden it becomes harder for new bands to get out there without, you know, the endorsement of another band or like something like that.
Yeah.
But hopefully the cycle starts over again. I'm looking forward to it if it does.
I think it still feels fresh.
Yeah.
I think there's a label popping up or a label's trying something different. Because that's what was so cool. It's like you follow the label because you knew whatever they were putting out was at least through their bullshit radar.
Yeah.
And it was cool. It could have been a fucking weird like singer-songwriter thing or it's like a, you know, a prog band. Whatever it is, like yeah. it fit into the thing and you gave it a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I think here pretty soon there's going to be some of the smaller labels that are popping up are going to start being the labels that people are following. Because it's, you know, you start getting to the point where like labels are picking up all the bands that, you know, the top shelf bands or the Kind of Lucky Stars bands and all those stuff. They're moving up to like us and Sorority Noise and, you know, and Time and Parts, you know,
Black Cement,
yeah,
they're moving up,
you know, and then so you need those smaller labels to come through, and I think they'll be the ones again.
Those are the ones I try and like go to and find out. Yeah, or I'm getting emailed. I mean, there's emails every day from a label or a band or a kid, and it's so cool to kind of feel that there's people cultivating it.
Yeah. It's like I do on our Twitter every now and then. As if I feel like I'm not finding any music, I just tweet out. I'm like, yo, what are you listening to? I need something new. I actually recently found out about a few. That's how I found out about Mom Jeans from
no shit
from California. And they actually did the whole West Coast leg of this tour because my friend from Atlanta of all places was like, hey, listen to this band. And I listened to him and I was like, dude, this band is fucking awesome. So we tried to find a way that they could do part of the tour.
That's so cool.
And then I also found out about a band of high school guys from Michigan called Wellman. They just put out a record called Totem not too long ago. And it's on the, I think it's on NDE Records, which is like the non-denominational.
Yes. Yeah. NDE.
They put it out through them and it's probably one of the better like screamo records I've heard
really
in the last year and a half.
Wow.
I love it. It's like it's not overly complicated, but it's not too simplistic. It's just right there in that perfect.
Nice.
And I keep finding out. I think Michigan's actually got a really good scene going on right now.
I love Swordfish.
Yeah. And I like Swordfish, Wellman, if you haven't listened to him,
I highly recommend it.
And then you've got like there's a female artist out of Michigan right now called Shortly who we played a show with her and she blew me away. Like
wow.
Just blew me away. And then there's bands that are starting to get popular out of there, like a band called Hot Mulligan.
Yeah, Hot Mulligan's really cool. Yeah. I did some stuff early on with them.
Yeah, and I'm starting to see them all over the internet, you know. So it's also another really cool way to find music is just to ask people, you know.
No, that's the thing. Like someone was like, you know all the bands. I'm like, no, I don't. There are countless scenes and places in a basement show happening right now that I wish I could, but I don't. And it's I do that too. I'm like, all right, I'm on a. Usually when I'm on a flight from LA or New York, I'll be like, all right, what's everyone into?
Give me something to listen.
And then I'll have like 5 hours worth of stuff to go through. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a rad.
I mean, I've been doing it every now and then on our Twitter for a while, and you know, I always get like. The people that are just giving me the same stuff that I always listen to, you know, people are like, oh dude, listen to You Blew It. And I'm like, those are my friends. I've listened to You Blew It for years now. Give me something new.
Yeah.
You know?
Tanner knows.
It's like, but when someone does send me that gym, it just, it gives me that good feeling all over.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Finding something new. And then, you know, we get in the van and I'm like, yo, you guys heard this yet? Let's listen to it. And then they're all like, oh man, this is awesome.
And then they're going to instantly share with their buddies. And I feel like there's that, it's quicker, but it also could be really cool for a band to have something that quick. You could text me and be like, Tom, we just heard this band. You got to put, and I'll listen.
Yeah. And it's like,
that word
Sometimes
of mouth still
word
is
of mouth
there.
Is
still
like
there.
Still the most effective way to go, I think. And that's like when we did the whole Triple Crown like playlist on Spotify. Like we basically tried our best. Like we threw some bands in there that we knew everybody would know, but we tried our best to take all the bands that we listen to that we don't think everybody listens to, and expose them. You know, like,
yeah,
it's a good way to do it. And we were trying to do like a Free Throw Friday, like based off of our Spotify. But Spotify like messed up. We were going to make a playlist every Friday of just bands that we're listening to that, you know, aren't, you know, these super popular bands,
yeah,
you know, at the moment. Also, in throwing in some like Holland Notes, you know, occasionally.
Yeah, you got it. You got thrown the hits.
But yeah, I think the word of mouth part of it is really important. I think that's an extremely important thing. Like, if you find out about a new band, you should tell all your friends about it. You know, that's how I found out about some of my favorite bands in the entire world.
And it's a good thing because it's not helping them or saying that name to somebody else doesn't make, I don't know. It just seems like, oh, I want to hold them for myself. And it's like, you can't do that.
No.
And it's also, a band's got to be cool. Like, if they're like, oh man, they're a bunch of dicks.
Yeah. luckily for us in this scene that we're a part of, everybody's pretty fucking cool. I haven't come across too many people that are like, you know, assholes or anything.
But
like
also,
that.
You came up in that part where you had the DIY shows. You saw how you pick someone up if they fall, or
yeah, absolutely
certain things to, you know, you saw the DIY mentality, and I think that's really important. And I think sometimes it's lost in certain.
Yeah, the sense
time.
Of community, you know.
Like, this is more, like, you know, this is important. Like, having a kid could be coming tonight. It's his first show. And he's watching you guys. And he's watching and learning and taking it all in. And if you're a certain way, or, like, there's a responsibility when you're there to present that DIY or that
absolutely.
Community.
Oh, and, you know.
I'm not saying you're not, but that's
absolutely.
They're total dicks on stage.
That's the idea. And the thing is we. It's one of my biggest concerns, especially if a show is going absolutely crazy, is to always make sure that everybody knows, like, hey, take care of each other. That's because that's what I came up in. You know, it's like I came up in a, you know, I take care of you, you take care of me, we have fun. You know, kind of.
Do you think when community. It gets too big that gets lost?
Sometimes, but I think as long as, you know. You do your best not to lose sight of it.
Yeah.
I think you'll do okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when we played Bloodfest this year, like at the beginning of this tour, things were getting pretty out of hand at one point. So, you know, you just got to make sure to take a second and just remind people. Like, it's kind of your job, you know, when you're on stage, like, to make sure that everyone is still taken care of. It's almost like a... You know, you're a master of ceremonies.
Yeah. And they're going to listen to you. And it's not just because you have a mic. It's just that you're presenting that idea.
Yeah, you're presenting your show, you know what I mean? And they're having fun with it, but you have to remind them that, you know, they have to take care of each other and have a good time. You don't want someone coming out hurt.
Yeah. No, definitely. The record.
Yeah.
We can talk all day.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. A, because... It sounds, you were talking earlier about that sort of like clean guitar.
Yeah.
Like this one sounds like big.
Yeah.
But it's also my favorite, loud, soft, like, you know, like that sort of dynamic. And
it was something, that dynamic was something that we were definitely aiming for on this record. It's something that it's always been kind of a part of our band.
Definitely more pronounced.
Yeah. We just wanted it to be more pronounced. We wanted the big parts to be more like huge.
Yeah.
And we wanted the soft parts to be, you know, brought back down. Because it was something that we always enjoyed doing. I mean, especially, you know, with two beers in, you can tell, you know, the verse is very soft. The chorus is very loud.
Yeah.
The verse is very soft. The chorus. So it's always been there.
Yeah.
But, for this record, we just wanted to expand on that. That was definitely when we were writing was something that we were going and going, we want to expand on the dynamic of the sound of the band. And I think it played a big part in what we wrote and how we wrote it. And I personally enjoy it. I feel like I'm finally getting to play
what you want.
Some music that I want to play.
And it took a few records.
Yeah, no, we definitely had to kind of figure out what we were doing. I mean, there's already people on the internet now that are like, oh, they changed. They changed their sound.
Don't listen to that bullshit, man.
It's fine. Not everybody's going to like it.
Not everybody's going to like it. It's always like you'd go to the absolute punk and we'd post something when I worked at EVR. We'd post a news item. And then if there was one kid that was like, yeah, that Bear vs. song or that Bear vs. Shark song is a piece of shit, we'd be like, man, everyone hates it. Even though it was some fucking loser in his basement.
Yeah.
Not a loser. You know? So it's...
Well, yeah, to me, like...
You are allowed to progress as a band.
Exactly. And it's like I told someone recently, I said, I fucking love Weezer, but I don't like every Weezer album. Like, you know, if you don't like this album, that's fine. That's your taste, and you're more than welcome and allowed to not like it. But it's what we wanted to do, you know, as a band. It's who we are. We didn't try to be different. We didn't try to really do anything other than, you know, trying to make the band a little bit louder, you know.
But if you wrote the same record,
would be complaining.
Corey just writes the same songs.
Same songs over and over again.
That's my, like, annoying internet voice.
Well, and especially with this record and the lyrical content, some people seem to get it, and some people seem to think that it's a little bit all over the place. But honestly, I feel like I'm pretty straightforward on the lyrics on this record. There's a few moments where it's kind of like vague, but I left it that way so that other people could insert themselves into it.
They're
rather
yours.
Than it being specifically, this is Corey's song. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, I would much rather the people who are listening to it be able to insert themselves into it and relate it to their own lives as well.
I just watched another Nirvana doc. I mean, Nirvana's the reason I pick up the guitar.
Yeah.
Like, literally saw Smells Like Teen Spirit, walked upstairs and said, get me a guitar at the guitar store. Right now. That whole, like... You know, his lyric, he says in a lot of interviews, like, you think the lyrics mean this? They don't. Like, don't read it. It's like, if you interpret it a certain way, then that's what you took from it.
And that's kind of what I wanted for this record.
Yeah.
I mean, I have my specific reasons I wrote every single song on the record, but I wanted people to take it and make it their own. I wanted people to hear the record and, you know, go, oh, this... I feel like this song is about me, you know, for whatever reason that it is. And it's also a reason that I try my best. I don't always do it, especially if a song is oddly specific. I try my best to write with mostly gender neutral pronouns because I feel like everybody should have a chance to insert themselves into a song. When I was a kid, I used to like love listening to pop songs, and there'd be female singers, you know, and they would sing, and I would always change the her to like him.
Yeah,
that to fit my life.
Yeah,
and then you know, I know that people do the same thing whenever like male singers. Like, I know that some females will do the same thing; they'll change the pronouns in the song when they sing it to make it more relevant to them.
Yeah,
and that was something whenever we started the band that I became really like obsessed with. I was like,
interesting.
I didn't want people to have to change, you know, the lyrics to make it fit their lives. So I was like, I just have always aimed to write in gender neutral pronouns.
Interesting.
It's been a very big thing for me since we started this band.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's only a few songs I think that actually use specific pronouns. I think Two Beers In is one of them because I use the word he. And on the new record, I think I'm almost positive besides the opener, which is about my relationship with my dad. The only song that uses a gender-specific pronoun is Hope Spot, because I say a man, you know what I mean? But that, honestly, the reason I use that is because it was very specific meaning of the song to me, and it was easier to, you know, like, put in the in the lyrics.
Yeah.
A little bit of songwriting laziness there. But,
yeah, no.
If you listen to both the last two records, I tried my best not to use any specific pronouns
mm-hmm.
because I think it's very important that people be able to relate to music. I mean, I know some people write music in a very specific way and want it to be their work of art, and you know, and that's completely fine. But for me, especially for Free Throw and the whole kind of music that we write is, I really wanted it to just be open and relatable
for everybody.
For everybody.
Yeah. And then for the record itself, is there anything that you've like seen differently in this cycle? You know, having Triple Crown, having a different, you know, approach, having some folks behind it.
Yeah, I definitely have a lot more to do now.
You're sitting in a van, you could be sleeping.
No,
I'm joking.
This is one of the things I was looking forward to the most.
Oh, rad. Thank you.
but yeah, like there's a lot more to do. I have a lot more of a busy life now because of it. Even when I'm at home, because the album is new, I still have to wake up and, you know, do phone interviews and things like that. That's a lot different than before.
Yeah.
Coming from the last album when we started it, we just toured and played in basements, you know. This is our first headlining tour.
Congrats on that, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. That's a big odd switch from what we're used to doing, you know. Now we're the first band to arrive, the last band to leave, you know. Whereas before, we'd show up at our, you know, it's support load in.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't even have to sound check. Just backline. Then you get up, you play, and then you take your stuff back out the van, and then you hang out and get drunk for the rest of the night with everybody else. You know? But now it's a lot different. You have a lot more responsibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, when more people are backing the record and when more people are doing things for the record and you have a PR team and all of that kind of stuff, there's a lot more expected out of you. The responsibility gets a little bit higher, which I think we've handled very well. We're kind of known for being a little bit of a crazy band on tour and being like a bunch of like fun loving drunk guys.
Yeah.
A la, you know, TMP. Those are like our best friends.
Tiny Moving Parts. Yeah.
Yeah. We get along with them very, very well.
How about the Prawn guys? Yeah.
We're kind of like a trifecta. That tour was basically three bands of just best friends. Getting drunk, I think. but yeah, the responsibility definitely goes up, and there's a lot more of expected of you. But at the same time, there's a lot taken off your shoulders. You know what I mean? You're not doing everything for once.
Yeah,
the band isn't now. Even though I have to do a lot more like press stuff and like that kind of stuff, and we have to do interviews and, you know, photo shoots and stuff like that, we can focus more on the music now. You know what I mean? We can focus more on being a band rather than, okay, who's booking this tour?
Exactly.
You know, who's you know, advancing the tour? Who's talked to the promoter? Does anybody have the promoter's number? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That kind of thing, which used to be what a van ride was like. And now the van ride is just kind of like, okay, what time we're supposed to be there? All right, cool. I have enough time to drink a Four Loko in the back seat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or we just, hey, I just wrote this riff. I want everybody to hear it.
Yeah, let everybody hear this, you know, riff. Or, you know, oh, hey, I have this kind of this lyrical idea. You know, we just have a lot more time to be a band now, which is pretty cool. It's busy right now, but that's probably because of the headlining tour.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think it's nice to have a team behind you, which is really cool. Yeah, moving up to Triple Crown. And Fred is the fucking greatest guy. I've enjoyed working with Fred so much, and he's been so supportive of every idea we had. Cool fun fact, actually, is when we were recording the record, Fred didn't even want to hear it till we were done with it.
Really?
Yeah.
What did he say to you?
Basically, he said he didn't want to impede on our process. You know, that he didn't want to. He didn't want to influence. He just wanted the record to be what the record was going to be. You know, let the band do the band's work.
Yeah.
Which was really, really cool, and I really, really respect him for
and
that.
You could relax a second,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you didn't feel like you were having to, and he's paying for it at the time, you know, and you didn't have to go, oh man, I hope he fucking likes this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, whenever we sent it to him, I kind of sweat for a little bit.
Of course. But
luckily, he came back, he loved it.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, that was a really cool thing about working with Triple Crown, was that whenever we were in the studio, there wasn't a single time where, you know, someone was like, ah, no, this isn't going to work. Like, let's do something else. It was more of just like, you guys do what you do. You make your art. You make what you want to make. And then, you know, we go from there.
That's what's most important is
I
that
agree.
When you saying that you're comfortable and relaxed,
mm-hmm.
and you're not thinking about other things. Well, guess what gets to take center stage? The music,
yeah.
Which is what happened when you're with your friend and he was telling you about Algernon for the first time.
Exactly.
Was there anything else you were worrying about?
Nope.
At the time?
Not at all. No, all I was thinking about is what I was hearing right there at that moment.
So to be able to have that moment again probably felt,
yeah, it was great. Well, and you know, with those days are gone, when we were recording it, we had a bunch of shit go down beforehand, and we didn't end up going to a studio. We ended up going to Larry's room. Larry lived in a house, and his roommate had a basement studio. We ended up paying him he's one of our good friends. But we ended up paying him to do the record for 6 days because he had to take off work for 6 days to do it. So we were like, we'll pay you for these 6 days. And so we recorded the whole record in 6 days in a mad sprint. You know, there was no time to really, like, go, oh, well, let's try this, or let's try this. It was just basically the songs that we had written, recorded in 6 days. I had a day and a half to do vocals. So, I just had to, like, go as fast as I could. And this time, I felt like the music didn't really get to take as much of a center stage as I would have wanted it to. And I know, like, now I've learned, you know, from a lot of people that record is really, like, an important record to them. And that's fucking awesome and really cool to me. But for this record, we actually got to take the time and, you know, make it sound like we wanted it to sound.
Yeah.
Which was really cool.
What do you wish someone told you back then for now? Like, was there anything that you were like, I wish they fucking told me to, you know, how to piss in a bottle? No, I'm kidding. Like, was there anything, like, business-wise that you've sort of looked back on?
I don't know, really.
Or anything out there for someone in a band being like, hey, watch out for this, or this is something that I learned later.
Don't try to park a van and trailer in New York City.
That's a very good point. That is a very good point.
No, but I think one of the coolest things I learned throughout the whole process was to not let every single little thing get to you. You kind of got to be like a rain jacket, you know what I mean, and let the water bead down. You're still going to get a little wet, but at least, you know, you're not getting soaked, you know.
You're still doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
Yes, you take criticism, you're understanding of it, but you can't listen to everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to have a little bit of thick skin sometimes, you know.
And with the internet,
especially with the internet, you know. And also, you know, just don't let, you know, people walk all over you. Because, I mean, earlier, whenever we first started, we were just kind of like yes men. You know what I mean? We were just like, oh, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we'll do that. Sometimes it's nice to take a step back and kind of look at things and go, okay, well, what will work out the best for us? Yeah. And we learned how to do that, you know, over time. And
was it like for shows, like saying that we'll do a fest and we were like, oh, wait, we have to drive 12 hours?
Yeah, that kind of thing. Like, I mean, whenever Free Throw first started, there was a DIY venue in Nashville called the Owl Farm. And we literally played there multiple times a week, you know. And in a way, like, we built up a fan base around town because of it, because everybody knew it was going to be fun. It was going to be a party. It was a BYOB type spot. And I mean, it's a way that we met a lot of the bands that we are friends with now today, including, like, You Blew It and Time. Well, we met Timing Parts a long time before that, but, like, that's how we met, you know, Dowsing, and that's how we met Empire, and eventually became signed to Count Your Lucky Stars Records for the first release. But the thing is, you know, if you play there 3 times a week, not everybody's going to come to every single show. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, Corey, we're busy. You know how things are.
I'll see you in 2 days, you know.
Exactly.
So
you had to make it more precious.
You kind of have to make it like, oh, man, Free Throw's playing in town. You know, oh, I got to go, you know. So you make those little mistakes at the beginning.
Yeah.
And then you learn kind of how it works. At first, we were just like, dude, let's play every show all the time.
We'll be the opener.
Well, I mean, we didn't really have big ambitions for the band, to be honest. We basically started it so that we could get into shows for free.
Yeah. Let's play with our favorite bands and, get, you know,
and
have,
just,
a,
and have
get
a good
in.
Time. I mean, at the time, I was already in close to my mid-20s, or in my mid-20s, and I had been touring, you know, for a while at that point, and I was kind of like, yeah, you know, I just want to play for fun.
Yeah.
And now I'm in a band that has done more touring than any band I've ever been in my entire life.
What do you want to do next?
I don't know. I'm enjoying my life the way it is right now. It's kind of cool.
To make it a career.
Yeah. That's the plan. I turn 30 next year. So it's like I'm glad that things are starting to look up and I can actually say that this is my career. I don't work a job at home anymore.
Congrats.
Which is nice. I don't really make much money. But
congrats.
But
I usually say congrats after whatever they say, right after that, to make them feel better.
But yeah, I mean, like, it's gotten to the point where the band is my full-time job now. And I enjoy it. It's a little stressful, but I enjoy it.
Cool. So anything else for the new record? Anything else you want people to know? Any?
Yeah. The theme of the record is something that's really cool to me. Because a lot of people don't realize it off the bat, but it's actually a continuation of Those Days Are Gone. Those Days Are Gone was about a relationship that I had that went very, very sour. One that I expected to last the rest of my life, you know. And so I wrote a record about it, you know. And it was like, okay, cool. I got that off my chest. And for the next record, I was like, well, what do I want to do? I can't just write another breakup record. I really haven't. At the time, I was like, I really haven't experienced anything like that since. So I've already written all I wanted to write about it. And so at the time, I was really starting to explore I was really starting to have like a bunch of anxiety attacks again because I suffer from high anxiety.
Was that something from early? Was that high school? When did you find out?
I've suffered from anxiety since I was diagnosed with anxiety disorder when I was 4 or 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
you've been dealing with it.
Dealing with it for a really, really long time. And, I also suffered through depression in high school and college. And with my anxiety disorder, it comes in different forms, you know, social anxiety, just generalized anxiety a lot too. I actually have, which is really weird. I have a really high anxiety for being in vehicles, like in cars.
Really?
Especially if I'm like not in the front seat and buckled up.
Interesting.
But I chose a career
that you have to switch. You can't always call shotgun.
Yeah, I have to be. Well, and actually, it's really funny because in the van, I usually ride in one of the back benches because I don't know why. I think it's me kind of trying to make myself cope. But I chose a career where I have to deal with one of my greatest fears all the time, and that's riding in a big van and trailer
and meeting people every day.
And I think it's actually helped a lot, but
because you could have been home, could have stayed at home, you could have nothing, you know.
Yeah,
played video games. I love video games.
Yeah,
but
I love video games too.
but that you're confronting it and working
absolutely
at it.
And I don't think I did it on purpose. I don't think I chose this lifestyle and career because of that fact, but it definitely made me have to work with it, you know, and to try and learn and cope. But yeah, so with the second record with Bear Your Mind, the idea behind it was I had especially started to struggle with those things and with other things in my life, including, you know, like dependency on alcohol and stuff like that, really hard after that relationship. And the more I thought about it, the more I said, you know, this is the perfect thing for me to write a record about, is the few years after that relationship and what I've dealt with and what I've learned about myself and how I've had to overcome certain problems and, you know, the journey through my introspective self. And so I went into the idea when we first started writing songs for the record. That's the idea I went in with, is this is what I want to write the record about. I didn't know exactly how it was going to go, but that's the idea I went in with. And I mean, I'm happy with how it came out. You know, there's songs on the record that deal with, you know, like loss. Dead Reckoning is about whenever my grandfather died when I was 13. He died in a car accident, which does not help my vehicular.
No, it does not.
Anxiety at all. And, you know, there's songs about social anxiety. There's songs about generalized anxiety. There's songs about me being on medication for depression and anxiety and not feeling anything. You know, and then there's also songs because of a certain medication that I took for anxiety. One of the side effects was weight gain. I actually gained a bunch of weight and I dealt with body image issues for even up till now. Like, I still deal with it to this day. And, you know, so I kind of wanted to touch on everything that had happened After that moment. Yeah, after that moment. After that Those Days Are Gone moment, I wanted to touch on what was going on up until this moment. And that's why the album kind of starts off with my relationship with my dad and how he found his redemption in my eyes and how I need to find my redemption to myself. And then the second song is basically wrapping up Those Days Are Gone. Rinse Repeat is about the same relationship. It's about when the relationship actually ended, which is a very true story. That's the second verse is actually how the relationship ended. And about how I think that, like, at the time, I thought that that relationship had personally messed me up. And I blamed it on that. And the rest of the record is kind of a journey through everything that I was dealing with and all the different things that I've learned about myself up until the last moment of the record, which is when I was finally allowing myself to open up again to someone else and realizing that, you know, maybe it wasn't the relationship that had, you know, fucked me up. Maybe yeah. It was that I had something there all along that I just needed to kind of figure out for myself.
And being able to be open to say those things.
Yeah.
And to be able to, I think a lot of the, I thought there was some random criticism. I don't even know where this was, but it was like, every band is talking about how they're, you know, everyone's has anxiety. And I'm like, yeah. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Because I bet so many bands don't mention it, aren't diagnosed,
yeah.
Don't treat it, don't care, treat it with dependency on alcohol
Absolutely.
Or drugs. And I think it should not be this stigma of like, oh, well, it's, yeah, you're depressed. It's fine.
Yeah.
When it's just as serious as anything else. It's, and you guys talking about it, Cam.
Yeah.
Cam, you know, being able to speak about that. I hope the same thing I told you earlier about that kid learning.
Yeah.
I hope he hears that and says, you know, maybe, oh, my buddy's said that once. I'm going to ask him what's up or talk to him in a different way.
Absolutely.
I think you guys have got it better than my generation in actually talking about it instead of just kind of pushing it under the rug.
Yeah. Or beating around the bush, you know, a little bit. And that's one of the things that was the hardest thing about writing the record was opening myself up that much. Because, you know, it's easy to write about an ex or, you know, a relationship
yeah.
or like a love song or, you know, any of that kind of stuff or a breakup song. Like, it's easy because you can almost push everything onto that. Whereas when you start writing about yourself and writing about, you know, just opening yourself up out there, it becomes a little bit more revealing, a little bit more, like there were at times when I questioned putting Burn Heel on the record, the song that's about body image, because I was like, you know, like the things I say in the song are really, really like, I don't want people to think, you know, that I started, you know, getting in my head about
yeah.
how are people going to interpret this song? You know, I started the whole body image thing started creeping in. It's like, am I going to make people notice it more? You know, like, or like, is that
yeah.
kind of thing going to happen? But then, you know, eventually I just said, you know what, fuck it. Like I wrote this song for a reason. I wrote
this is what
song
came out.
I felt like I needed to, and I feel like the world needs to hear it, you know? So I just put it out there. And you know, it's funny thing that a lot of people are making that criticism now that a lot of bands are talking
so
about.
So you've
that.
Heard that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's crazy to me because most of these records that are coming out that are talking about this, they were all written and recorded around the same time. And it's not like we all got together and we're like, let's just start writing about
all right.
this.
Conference call, every emo band.
No, I think it's just because we're all making that, you know, that
you're making those different steps
yeah.
where you're not doing the breakup record. You're not doing your first record. You're making that third record and you're actually dealing with shit.
Yeah.
And it's more serious. And that goes back to that earlier thing we talked about before we even started talking about this genre, this music, this scene has always been kind of serious
Absolutely.
With treating if it's food, not bombs, mm-hmm. or if it's war or anything. It was like you were speaking direct.
Yeah. Well, and you
There's
know
no bullshit. There's no pop songs are all, you know, a lot of it's bullshit.
Absolutely. I think that one of the reasons why a lot of bands like us and Sorority Noise and, you know, other bands writing about the stigma of mental health and stuff like that and, you know, putting ourselves out there on that line is because at the moment that's something that really needs to be talked about. And it's something that a lot of people are starting to realize that, wow, you know, like this is a real thing. It's not just, you know, like depression is a real thing. Anxiety is a real thing. Like you said, a lot of people before have just kind of pushed it under a rug or, you know, just kind of brushed it off. But it really is something that people deal with. And I think that the reason that a lot of bands are starting to write about it is because sometimes you just got to write about what's going on in your life. And I think, and you know, it's revealing. Yeah. But you know, that's sometimes that's what you do. when I wrote Those Days Are Gone, I didn't write a breakup record because I wanted to write a breakup record. I wrote, a breakup record because, you know, I felt like the relationship that I was going to have forever was gone. And I needed to write that record.
Yeah.
It was almost therapeutic in a sense. And it's the same thing for this record. The reason I wrote the lyrics that I did on this record is because I needed to. And I've said this a lot in the past like few months. One of the hardest feelings and hardest emotions of having when you're in a situation like that, whether you're dealing with anxiety or dealing with body image issues or depression or even a breakup, is feeling that you're alone. Like you're all alone in that feeling. Like no one else knows how you feel, you know, that kind of thing. And that's the hardest part, I think, sometimes. And so I felt like if I wrote this stuff that I feel and that I'm dealing with and I put it out there and then someone comes up to me and goes, hey, I feel the exact same way, you know, or I'm dealing with this and this song captures how I feel or anything like that, it makes me feel less alone. And I hope it would make them feel less alone. You know, I think that's part of the thing is feeling alone sucks. And whenever you have something that you can relate to, all of a sudden it makes it not so bad, you know, as it was. You know, there's still the problem there, you know, but it makes you, it makes you feel like you're not, you know, the only one dealing with the problem. And that's also one of the reasons why I loved those bands when I was growing up, is because I was hearing lyrics that was like, man, this is like, well, you know, when I got older, especially into high school and stuff, you know, at first I was listening to the riffs and stuff like that, but, you know, you start paying attention to the lyrics and stuff and you go, oh man, well, like, wow, this is, I feel this way. And I think that's very important. You know, I think that's extremely important. I think that people should be able to relate to music. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love bands like Explosions in the Sky. I'm never going to be able to personally relate because there's no lyrics or anything like that. But I still relate to it in a way, I guess. It's still the soundtrack of my life when I'm walking down the street.
Of course it is. You know? Of course it is.
But that was something that I've always aimed for with Free Throw's lyrics is like I wanted, if I'm going to write in this therapeutic sense and I'm going to put myself out there, I just hope that it makes people feel better the way that it makes me feel better when people tell me that they relate to it. That was a little bit of a rant there.
I love it. What are you talking about? That's what we do this. That was really great. I think when you say that, and a kid, a same thing. He's learning from you about how to act when you say, hey, everybody, chill out, or blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing when you're saying those lyrics and that kid goes home and he's like, you know, maybe he's fine. You know, maybe he just needs to talk with his parents. He doesn't need to go to therapy. Maybe it's something little, but it turned that person to at least acknowledge it and talk to someone.
Absolutely. And it's just like, with the song Burn Heel, like Better Have Burn Heel that we were talking about earlier, that I was so hesitant about putting out because of, you know, how I was like, I don't know if I want to do, you know, so hesitant to do it. I've had a few people come up to me and just be like, hey, like, thank you. Like, and I'm like, no, thank you. You know, like the fact that I put this out there and put myself out there and that they can relate to it. Honestly, that helps me just as much as it helps anyone, you know.
And it goes back to what is that, word of mouth and telling someone?
Yeah.
They were telling you something, and that's going to help them and you at the same time. So keep doing that.
Yeah.
Keep, hey, I really like Free Throw. I really like, you know, Explosions in the Sky. Here's why.
Yeah. Sometimes you just got to talk, you know.
Yeah. That's why we have a podcast. Sorry, I talk so much, people. They usually hear the same stories all the time, so I have to edit them out now. But if I listen to old episodes, there's like the same stories. I'm learning. Cool, man. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, man. I had a great time doing it. It's very exciting. It's really cool. Like, this podcast is very cool because it's just like, just talking, you know, just chatting. It's not, you know, you get a lot of like interviews and stuff where it's just like the same questions over and over again. And it's nice to kind of just get to talk and like, you know, actually hear someone else's side of the story too.